Your Honor, if it pleases the court, I'm Eugene Austin. I'm here representing Christopher Malaga, the appellant. I'd like to reserve 2.5 minutes, or three.
Round up or down?
Three.
I'm not that good with this device.
Oh, that's okay. Currently in this case, there's a number of issues. One is whether there was sufficient evidence to support premeditated murder, and then a number of evidentiary issues relating to the suppression of evidence that the appellant wished to submit to the court, evidence of other crimes, charging decisions, and also some evidence related to race and that had to do with the validity of initial identification by one of the witnesses. In this case, the evidence is almost entirely based off of the evidence given by two witnesses who say that they were present at the shooting.
When you look at the testimony of Hill and Knowles, isn't there a reasonable inference that there was a considerable amount of time that passed from the start of the confrontation to the shooting? We have Hill's testimony that the exchange was made, that Malaga came forward, pulled the gun out from his pocket of his hoodie, pointed the gun at the victim. Then they had an exchange of some kind of an argument, a little hard, little different variations on what the argument was. Then Knowles, who was there with the purchasers, as a purchaser, steps in, tries to ease Garcia out of the situation, tells him to just turn around, walk away. Garcia doesn't respond to that. He advances again, and then Knowles steps aside. The gun was pointed at Knowles for a period of time, then the gun was pointed back at Garcia, and then the shooting occurs. Doesn't that support an inference that there's a significant amount of time that passes from the initiation of the confrontation till the shooting?
Well, yes, it could be. Of course, that's not the actual what they're looking at as far as time. And time isn't really the only issue and cannot be the only issue. And it doesn't need to be a significant amount of time, as the courts well know. But the question is, in a premeditated murder, is when was this premeditation done? They have to be a specific deliberation on the intent to actually commit the crime. That can be a short time, but we don't know when that occurred. There's no evidence that there was actually any deliberation. There was a confrontation. There was a gun, but there's no evidence of actual deliberation. There's no statement, "I'm going to shoot you," and followed by a shot. There's no knocking someone to the ground and shooting him multiple times. So the amount of time is not really an issue. The cases actually state that there just has to be some time. And, you know, it could be a considerable amount of time, it could be less. You know, sometimes that can make a difference if you actually leave the scene to go get a weapon and come back. That would be something. But just the amount of time of this argument does not show any deliberation.
How about the circumstantial evidence of motive? There was an ongoing dispute between the two. Bringing the gun concealed in his pocket to the drug buy that Malaga wasn't directly involved in at all.
Well, we don't know where the gun came from. It's interesting. There's no evidence that Malaga ever had a gun prior to this. And there's no evidence that he knew how to operate guns or what would be done or where to get one. The only people that had guns were the witnesses. Mr. Hill apparently ran a gun trafficking business. But Malaga had no connection to the guns until the witnesses said that he pulled one out. And
From the pocket. So somewhere he had it with him.
Yeah, well, one would assume that they had it, but of course the question then is why did he have it? Did he get it for the purpose of killing someone? And there's no evidence of that. There's no evidence that, hey, I'm going to get this gun so I can go shoot somebody. I have a concealed weapons permit. I carry a gun quite often. I don't do it with the intent to kill anyone. I don't want to shoot anyone. I have it for other reasons, legal reasons. And That's the same here. There has to be some evidence that Mr. Malaga got the gun with the intent to use it to kill Mr. Garcia. And there is nothing. It just appears out of thin air and disappears. It's not found afterwards. The only evidence that the state presented on this was when the gun went off. Well, Mr. Knowles says that the gun was racked, which would indicate that it was a semi-automatic. Semi-automatics operate in different ways. You know, that's one way to clear the gun, get the bullet out. It's also a way to put a round in the chamber. Some guns can't. I have a Browning 380, for example. You cannot fire it if the magazine is not in the gun. My SD9 can be fired, and there's a warning on the gun that it can be done that. So if you have someone that doesn't have any training in the gun, there's no evidence that he had any training, he could very well not know how to operate this weapon. That's one of the ways people accidentally shoot themselves. But there's no evidence that he actually did any knew anything or intended to do anything. They didn't find the gun afterwards. They didn't find who gave it to him, how he got it. It just comes out. There's an argument, it goes off, and the witness Knowles, and this is the only real evidence about intent, Knowles states that the shooter was surprised. He actually says he was surprised and looked like he was trying to put a safety on it. He didn't know what had happened right immediately after the gun, and after he fumbles with it, he takes off running. The state's evidence there actually suggests that this was not an intentional murder. But to have some sort of premeditation, you have to actually show that he thought about it and this came to the conclusion, I'm going to shoot this person and kill him. And there's nothing like that.
Time's running short. Yep. On your confrontation issues, I want to make sure we're clear. Those were not raised in the trial court, the confrontation.
They were all motions and liminees, and the court had previously ruled against the appellant and said that you could not bring these issues up. They were they go to the motive and intent of the witnesses.
Raised in those disputes were over other issues. It wasn't raised in the context of a confrontation clause.
You can answer.
Well, it was raised in the intent that they wanted to show what the motives were for the witness testifying the way they did. Mr. Hill had a lot of motive not to testify the way he did.
I'm just asking about the legal argument that was made. So my impression that the legal argument was made was that it was admissible for reasons other than the confrontation clause.
Well, there were
you didn't argue confrontation in the pretrial motions.
Well, I don't think that that's required, but certainly
you did or you didn't.
Yeah, I don't remember offhand. I wasn't there, but certainly the
whatever's there is in the record.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing missing, right?
Yeah, I don't believe so. And so the confrontation issue is something valid for appeal, and I think that it's legitimate. Thank you.
I may use the Alamo. May it please the court, Greg Banks, Island County Prosecutor for the State of Washington. Mr. Malaga devotes 18 pages of his brief challenging the sufficiency of the evidence of premeditation. I think here the state actually had more evidence of premeditation than we do in many cases. Because there were text messages indicating the conflict between Mr. Malaga and Mr. Garcia had begun about 4 hours before the shooting. And Mr. Malaga stated things to Mr. Hill, that he was displeased with Mr. Garcia. The text messages reflected that. Mr. Malaga made some of the same statements to Mr. Garcia just before shooting him, and then even after the shooting, in talking to members of Mr. Garcia's family, Malaga made statements to the fact that he was unhappy with Adam Garcia, that Adam Garcia had been running his mouth, and that he went out of his way to point out to family members of this man who had just been gunned down, of course, while denying that he was involved in the shooting, that they had not been getting along well.
Well, not getting along is not the same thing as premeditation.
Well, sure, but just it's evidence of motive, which is one of the circumstantial pieces of evidence we look at for premeditation.
And so the motive is they had a disagreement.
They had a disagreement. Mr. Garcia kicked Mr. Malaga out of his house where he'd been allowing Malaga to stay. And as to the nature of the disagreement, the only as much as we know about that is what Bryce Hill testified to, which was that it apparently concerned some kind of a drug deal or Mr. Malaga's refusal to advance drugs to Mr. Garcia so that he could potentially sell them later on that evening. But that's what Bryce Hill alluded to in his testimony. It's one or the other, but as Judge Varellin pointed out, this dispute went on for four or so hours. Malaga shows up at a drug deal that he's not a part of. He's an uninvited guest. He has a loaded semi-automatic gun in the hoodie of his sweatshirt. He racks the slide while it's still in his sweatshirt. And Knowles and Bryce Hill were surprisingly consistent on these points, even though these two men did not know each other and did not talk to each other from the date of the incident until trial or ever, as far as
I didn't pick up that where in the record it's clear when the gun was racked. I just picked up that while there was this, while the people were present, two people heard the gun being racked and then saw Malaga point the gun. I'm not sure that it was clear it was racked while it was in his pocket.
My recollection is that that was what Knowles testified to, and it was right after the drug transaction had been completed. Garcia and Hill, who apparently knew each other and were friends, basically exchanged goodbyes, and then Knowles said that he heard the gun rack while it was in his pocket.
The fact that it was racked, that I think you appear to argue that's part of the circumstantial evidence of premeditation, but I mean, any gun that's ever been used to shoot anybody has been loaded at some point, and so how does the fact that it was a round was advanced into the chamber just before he pointed the gun at somebody reveal anything about premeditation?
Sure. I think you could probably say that about any of the pieces of circumstantial evidence, but, of course, what we do here is we take it all together and look at it under the standard of review that says, could any rational trier of fact find that this was premeditated? I think more important is the fact that we have evidence of this dispute between the two of them, that Malaga shows up with the gun, and he could have pulled out the gun and threatened Adam Garcia without putting a round in the chamber, but he did take that extra step. And then there was some time that occurred while the argument was playing out on the street, and Mr. Knowles trying to break things up. Did Mr. Malaga have time to deliberate about what he was about to do? There's ample evidence of that, and the jury found that he did, in fact, act with premeditated intent. He planned. He had deliberation. He had a motive, and the standard of review is construing all evidence most favorably to the state. So I think there's more than sufficient evidence to uphold that aspect of the conviction on a sufficiency of the evidence challenge. The issue about the Confrontation Clause, I don't believe it was ever raised in that context. These were evidentiary issues, and the Confrontation Clause analysis doesn't come into the fact where the evidence sought to be admitted isn't even relevant, which was what the court found here, properly so. The defense wanted to raise issues of Mr. Hill's past drug dealing based on an analysis that police did of his phones. There were text messages that by a long ways predated this incident and concerned other people that were not involved in this incident. And so they were simply irrelevant. They didn't tend to prove any fact of consequence to this case. Moreover, the jury had ample evidence that was put on by the state that Bryce Hill was a drug dealer and that Bryce Hill was unlawfully known to carry firearms because he admitted to it. the evidence was there. It doesn't particularly go to credibility, but it wasn't excluded from the trial. That was what she was after. The issue about the identification of Mr. Vasquez was raised at trial and here again on appeal. Just to be clear, that the state's opposition to that was that they wanted to put in evidence that Mr. Vasquez's parents, his mother in particular, was of Japanese ancestry. And that theory was because Mr. Knowles, when he first saw the shooter, Mr. Malaga, he identified him to police as a short, fat Asian guy. And he identified Mr. Hill as a tall, skinny black guy. So in terms of differentiating between those two men, that was how Knowles did it.
Once the jury has their photographs and evidence, though, what difference does it make to anybody what the ancestry was or what the CIA desk book
was? Well, that was the state's point, actually. It was completely irrelevant because Knowles didn't know what Malaga's or Vasquez's ancestry was. He just went by what he saw. And the photographs of these two men I don't know who looks more Asian than the other, but this is Mr. Vasquez on the left and Mr. Malaga on the right. Vasquez was the guy that they put in the photo montage based on their review of their database. And Mr. Knowles picked him out as the one. Here's the photo montage, which is attached to the brief, but you can see Mr. Vasquez is there at number two. Mr. Knowles was asked which one looks most like the shooter, and that's the guy he picked out. The next day, someone sent him a picture of Mr. Malaga, and he said, oh, I'm 100% sure that's the guy. And he said that he was only 80% sure on Vasquez. And the whole issue, it was a bizarre series of coincidences that Mr. Vasquez's mother was Japanese and that his first name was Nico because it was a name that Knowles had heard earlier in the night, but which wasn't really even connected to the shooting. So it became a big issue at trial, but I agree with Your Honor. It just none of it really mattered. It was a distraction, and I think it had the prospect of confusing the jury by elevating this question to something that actually mattered when, until they did some digging, nobody knew what their ancestry was. Counsel challenged the suppression of an anonymous tip, again dealing with Nico Vasquez. I just don't see how that would have been relevant to anything, and it was hearsay, but again it goes back to the Asian ancestry issue. So I don't have anything else unless the court has questions.
Thank you. Minutes.
Thank you. Let me just address the race issue a little bit. Since the reason that is important is because it was information that should have been given to the jury. The jury should have been the ones to look at that. Mr. Knowles gave a description. Now the state says, "Oh, that's just bizarre that it happened. Just happened that everything matched up with Mr. Velasquez." But it's important that it does. He said he was short, fat, Asian. He was named Nico. And lo and behold, they find a person that meets all of those criteria. And this is also why the anonymous tip was.
So we have a whole line of cases that deal with other suspect evidence. If you're pointing the finger at a particular individual, do you have to satisfy the requirements for other suspect evidence to have that person identified to the jury as another suspect?
Well, you might, but I'm not sure that that's necessarily the whole argument here.
Well, isn't that the argument that he's the other suspect?
Yeah.
He's a different suspect. Somebody else has identified
if
him.
That's, yeah, and to that extent, I suppose so. But the issue is the initial identification of the witness.
Well, why does it matter if he's not being pointed out as a other suspect?
Because the initial witness, because the whole evidence are these two witnesses. Mr. Hill had lots of reasons to lie.
Yeah, but what's the issue on which Mr. Vasquez would matter if not to point to him as a suspect?
Because Mr. Knowles' identification is then put as suspect. His whole identification was based on that, and it was correct. The initial one was correct. They found someone, and Mr. Velasquez was even in the area that night, driving back and forth.
So why does it matter that he was in the area?
Because the jury needs to be presented with all the evidence. The statements.
Well, jury doesn't need to be presented with all the evidence. The jury needs to be presented with the evidence that's properly admitted. So, I mean, we go back and forth in listening to your argument. On the one hand, the argument is, it shows that the declarant is an unreliable identifier because he identified the wrong person. But then on the other hand, you say, well, and his name was Nico, and Nico came up in the evidence, and he was in the area. Well, that seems to be saying, well, and he had something to do with it. The jury should believe that he had something to do with it, and then that makes it another suspect, right?
And I suppose you could address that, you know, that could be there, but you could also address it with a jury instruction saying that this is just what we're related to is the initial identification, whether his actual identification of this person was valid. He identified someone and then switched to somebody else. And you looked at the pictures, they could be twins. And that could be the coincidence. But the state wants you to believe that all the other statements were coincidence by themselves. And I think when you take out half of that, the jury is given half the information on the identification and then said, oh, it's okay, you can believe that.
Thank you very much.